by Bruce Alexander, Dr. Scanlon by John Biggins, Elizabeth by Tessa Nicholson, and The Postmaster by Bert Cools. Other parts were played by members of the cast. The violinists were Leonard Friedman and Ian Humphreys. The Malvern Point Mystery was written by Bert Cools from a reference in the short story The Veiled Lodger by Sir Arthur Conan Doyle. The director was Patrick Rayner.
Bert Cools is the author of the Feathered Adventures Sherlock Holmes in its second series now. And these stories are all drawn from references in Conan Doyle's originals.
Yes, they are.
And so they are canonical pastiches, Bert.
Yes, yes. They are drawn from the titles that I'm quite convinced Conan Doyle dropped into the stories in great glee, knowing that he'd never, ever have to actually write the things himself.
I should say you've also been the chief writer on BBC Radio 4's massive project to dramatise all 56 short stories and four novels in the Conan Doyle canon. You wrote a great many of those. Let me take you back, first of all, to what drew you to this character, or I should say this pairing of characters of Sherlock Holmes and Dr. Watson in the first place.
Do you know, I can't remember now if it was from reading the books or from hearing what at the time struck me as the wonderfully atmospheric old radio shows with Carlton Hobbs and Norman Shelley. And even just thinking about those shows now takes me back to my childhood and my parents' big polished radiogram and listening to them. There's something wonderfully cosy about them. But I do remember, if the shows did come first, I remember being very impressed by them, by the atmosphere, by the acting. So I'd like to think that it was the radio shows that first got me interested, and then I moved on to the stories from there.
There's a common opinion, really, that Holmes stands as a kind of Superman, a bringer of justice, and therefore that explains the popularity of the character. Do you think that's true?
I think it's partly true. I don't like, personally, the image of Holmes as Superman. I prefer that he's an extraordinary man who's developed extraordinary powers, but he's not infallible. And one of the things I've tried very hard to do is to paint him as a normal man in extraordinary circumstances. But yes, part of the appeal is that everybody needs a hero or heroes. And Holmes is that man. Holmes, particularly the earlier stories set firmly in the Victorian age, at a time when one dedicated good man could make a difference to society. And Holmes is that man.
So he's a hero.
They're both heroes. I think it's important to think of them as the pair of characters. The stories are about Sherlock Holmes and John Watson. That's another thing that I've tried very hard to do in the shows. I don't care for the traditional image of Holmes the all-powerful, Holmes the intelligent, and Dr. Watson running, puffing behind, saying, "Good Lord, Holmes, that's amazing. How did you do that?" They're an equal partnership. They both bring different things to the partnership, but each of the things they bring is essential to make the partnership work.
It is a partnership, and it's a very warm partnership sometimes, a very tetchy partnership sometimes.
Yes.
Let's move on to the notion of having done all the original stories. When you come to invent your own, albeit from little hints by Conan Doyle with the titles, when you invent your own, what's the challenge of that?
Well, the
or
most...
the problems, I should
Well,
should
yes,
say.
Thank you. The most basic problem, and also the most basic challenge, is that if you're dramatising a Conan Doyle story, he's very obligingly done all the hard work for you. He's given you the plot, he's given you the characters, he's given you the basic form and shape of the thing. It's necessary then to be audacious and say a radio play is not a short story. It needs a different shape to it, it needs a different structure, and I have to be strong enough to rip the story apart and put it back together again. But nonetheless, the basic building blocks are there. Writing an original story for such well-loved characters imposes all sorts of restrictions that wouldn't be there if I was writing a totally original piece with original characters in it. There are things that you cannot do with Holmes and Watson, and there are things that you are expected to do with Holmes and Watson, and both of those sets of things have to be in any original play.
I think one of the difficulties for you must be inventing manners of death or ways of killing or ways of mayhem or peculiar mysteries when there are already, well, let's say, 56 short stories and four originals. There's already 60 examples of how Conan Doyle did it. How do you try, at least, to be original in that regard?
One of the ways I try to look at the stories and the characters is that they are not, in the traditional sense, puzzle detective stories. The thrust of the story is not someone has committed a crime, how did they do it, how can we find out who they are? I mean, that is obviously a part of it. But Conan Doyle was quite fond of pointing out to people that in quite a few of the original stories, no crime is actually committed. It's easy now to think of the canon, as the fans like to call it, as a whole, and think, oh yes, murder mysteries, unravelling the clues, unmasking the killer at the end. It's interesting when you look at the stories, that isn't actually the template for a lot of them. And although in dramatising the original stories for the radio, I often thought it was necessary to make them into that kind of whodunit because that is what the audience now thinks they are. We also tried, everyone, you, the other writers, everyone involved, tried very hard to preserve that they are not necessarily someone commits a crime, are they going to get away with it? No, they're going to be caught. Writing the original stories, yes, they've probably become slightly more the puzzle than some of the originals are, but I like to think that they are at least as much about the characters, that we learn as much about the characters, including Holmes and Watson, as we do about the events.
In fact, actually, Conan Doyle's characterisation himself of some of his, shall we say, leading villains or whatever, was actually quite good, profound characterisation. I'm thinking of, is it Grimsby Roylott in The Speckled
Band? Yes,
even Charles Augustus Milverton, the notorious blackmailer. These are very, very well realised characters, aren't they?
Yeah, he wasn't.
He wasn't just a potboiler writer. He could actually write some depth.
No, he was a very good writer indeed. And it's an interesting conundrum that he thought the Sherlock Holmes stories were things that he just threw off and they got in the way of his more profound, serious, proper literary writing. And of course, history has proved him completely wrong, and it's for Sherlock Holmes that he's remembered. There is much more in the Sherlock Holmes stories than just Tuppenny Dreadfuls put out in a popular monthly magazine for people to read and then forget about.
I imagine there must be a generation coming up now who don't read the stories, whose only knowledge of Sherlock Holmes is from television or film.
Very definitely, yes. I've had letters, and you probably have as well, saying, what happened to such and such a scene in such and such a story? Why wasn't it there? And you have to say, well, because it's not in the story. It was in the Jeremy Brett TV version. Or no, that was only in the movie with Christopher Plummer or whoever. Yes, I mean, the fact is that Holmes and Watson are now much, much bigger and more encompassing than the 60 stories that they appear in.
It's very strange to think of J.K. Rowling writing Harry Potter in a cafe in Edinburgh, never imagining that this phenomenal success was going to overtake her, and Conan Doyle writing as an impecunious doctor, never knowing this thing was he was going to turn into what I think are called cultural icons.
No, absolutely. I mean, the reason he started writing Sherlock Holmes was purely a calculated financial reason. He sat in his surgery waiting for patients to come, and they didn't come, and he'd published a few general short stories, and he made a conscious decision to research the market to find out what was selling, what kind of characters were selling, what formats were selling, and he went into A Study in Scarlet, the first novel, calculatedly presenting a detective story, because detectives were popular, with a romance story interspersed into the middle of it, because romances were popular, set in America, because American stories were popular. And his one great leap was to make his detective a scientific, thinking detective who worked logically to his results rather than just having them fall into his lap.
But beyond that, the calculation, his talent as a writer, it's always struck me that what makes these characters live and probably explains why they endure, apart from the argument that he represents justice or something he wrote that can come in and right wrongs, or sort of lone ranger of the 19th century, is the brilliance of the detail. You just need to start listing the detail, which you can do for me perhaps, of what that sitting room is like, and the whole world comes alive, does it not?
It does, absolutely. And Doyle has that ability with places, with individuals, and with events. I mean, one of the great strengths of the original stories is that even a character who just crops up very briefly and then goes away again lives for you. I mean, the names are brilliantly chosen. The characteristics are beautifully dropped in. Yes, and places, the sitting room. I mean, I know that sitting room. I know everything from the bearskin rug to the letters which Holmes keeps in the centre of the wooden mantelpiece transfixed by a jackknife.
And the tobacco in the slipper.
The tobacco in the Persian slipper.
Victoria Regina carved out in bullet pockmarks on the wall.
Absolutely. On a board day, VR in the wall.
Do you ever get tempted to invent a couple more of those for yourself, or is it a bit, would that be over daring?
I've never thought of doing it. Now that you've put the idea into my mind, if we ever go to another series, I will do so. It's tricky. You can overburden the details, and you can lay yourself open to the accusation, oh, you're just trying to out Doyle. I mean, it's arrogant enough of me in the first place to be writing these things.
Bert Cools, thank you.
Thank you.